This is Shibuta, and I am a Game On Minion.
D20 Radio, your gamers roll. www.d20radio.com.
Game On.
Greetings, Gamer Nation. This is episode 24 of Game On. It is someday in June. Oh, Monday the 15th of June, 2009. And we bring you once again the wonderfulness of Game On. I'm your host, Brian, occasionally and recently known as Fiddleback on the forums. And with me today, once again, prepared like no other man on earth for what we're about to do to you, is my good friend and co-host, Andy.
Are we recording yet? Is this thing on?
Yes.
Oh! That was the whole prepared thing. Yes. Right, gotcha. Uh-huh. I'm you on track it. Here.
Ah, there goes the toboggan.
There goes the toboggan. Greetings, Gamer Nation. It is I, Andy, also known as Raven Wing upon the forums, when I choose to grace you with my presence and post some witticisms and whatnot, but, you know.
Witticisms.
Hey. Witticisms.
Is that what you're calling it now?
Yes. If you can't dazzle them with brilliance, well,
yeah,
sell them something.
What are we going to be talking about today, Andy?
Well, we are going to cover our impromptu kind of a top 10 favorite resource collecting games list.
Nice.
Yes.
That'll be fun because we like collecting.
A collection of collecting games. A
collection of collecting games collected together for you.
Yes.
The collective Gamer Nation.
That's true.
Upkeep phase.
Well, first and foremost, thanks go out to Shibuta for the bumpers on today's show. Thank you, Shibuta. If you would like to provide some bumpers for our amusement, you can send them to gameon@d20radio.com. We will be happy to receive them.
Yes, because when we're amused, we're happy.
That's right. Amusingly happy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, quite a bit going on the old D20 Radio Network this week. First is a brand new podcast, Department 7, with Agent Vince and his fellow agents. They've posted up episode numero dos, entitled Faster Than G.I. Joe, in which they discuss in the D20 modern rule set, the Fast Hero.
Oh, the Fast Hero is a good hero.
The Fast Hero is a good hero and a live hero.
It yes, with a very bloody strewn path of dead bodies behind him.
Well, at least when I play it, it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to literally pull NPCs out of my hat to try and bog you down.
I didn't realize he would be so dangerous. I told you. Two guns, John Woo, Chow Yun Fat.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah. The Fast Hero is definitely he's the wow. Yeah, he's yes. The stuff.
So if you would like to learn how to make your Fast Hero the most deadly person at the table, I would recommend checking out episode 2 of Department 7.
Also up this week, Minnie's Mayhem with Brev and Tenny, episode 7. Kenobi's Killers. All versions of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes.
That Obi-Wan Kenobi guy. He's kind of cool. Yeah, they literally covered every version of Obi-Wan Kenobi released in the Star Wars miniatures game to date.
That's a bunch.
That is a ton. They even covered the one in the land speeder.
Awesome.
So if you have an interest in Star Wars miniature gaming, then please check out Minis Mayhem episode number 7, Kenobi's Killers. The Order 66 podcast went up with a new episode this last weekend. GM Dave and GM Chris and Twi'lek Goodness are all present for episode 70, entitled DBAD. And if you don't know what that means, then you need to check out this episode. They talk about player and GM archetypes. What sort of GM or player are you? They provide a list for you to check yourself off on, and I must say, it was slightly embarrassing.
You fall under the evil bastard guideline, I believe, for GMs.
Yeah, they didn't really have one
okay.
For that.
How can you have a list of archetypes and not have the evil bastard?
Well, because, as it turns out, my GMing style is apparently a combination of 3 or 4 different archetypes, according to them. And they overlooked the fact that the evil bastard was an ever-present archetype, at least at my table. And we don't even want to talk about player archetypes, because that was a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah. That all need to be boiled down into soup and
right.
Tossed over the side.
Soup. So, yes, check out episode 70, DBAD, of Order 66.
Radio Free Homlet, join the DMs as they celebrate the first birthday of D&D 4E. 1 year.
1 year.
Can't believe it. They have an interview with Keith Baker, creator of the Eberron setting. Episode 23, 4E Birthday Surprise.
And I do have to give them some props for this episode, because not only did they interview Keith Baker, they actually gamed with him.
Did they?
Yes, they did.
Oh, no, that's coolness there.
Yes, the Eberron setting, home of every brain-dead warforged ever.
Gronk being one of them.
Yes. Gronk not know what you like. But Gronk hit thing with an axe. That make it
yes.
all better.
Make it better.
Yeah, excellent episode. Very nice interview. And they get into the, you know, kind of the, for those who aren't familiar with it, kind of the creation of the Eberron setting, how it all got started back in the contest that Wizards ran a few years ago, and then the updates from 3.5 Eberron to 4th edition Eberron, and it's all very involved and very exciting.
Excellent. All these programs and more are available on the D20 Radio Network, so check them out. Let us know what you think, and spend some quality time doing nothing.
Just you and your iPod.
Yes.
Bits and pieces.
By golly, there's news out there, sir. News everywhere.
News upon the horizon.
Yeah, lots of good stuff. We did a quick little comb through because, you know, I'm lazy and I didn't get show notes done until about an hour before the show. And we found some good little tidbits for you to chew on and digest. For example, Richard Breese releases a new game once every 2 years or so through his R&D games. And his title for 2009 is unlike any he's released previously. For one thing, the game includes dice. Not usual with Eurogame styles. For another, it has a marketing tie-in that the game will celebrate the 10th anniversary of BoardGameGeek.com, the go-to site for game information. And it's going to do this with both gameplay and artwork. And the Board Game Geek game, which is what it's called, will debut at Spiel 09 in October, has 3 to 6 players taking on 2 roles. a small dinner roll and a little French roll. No. First, they represent one of six game publishers, either Eggert Spiel, Hans im Glück, otherwise known as Man Riding Pig, Queen Games, R&D Games, Tree Frog Games, or Istari Games. And they want to supply their games to game shops, selling them in order to earn geek gold. Second, players control a team of three geeks who want to collect sets of games in order to satisfy the needs of their game groups. They'll earn geek gold based on how well they do this, and the player with the most geek gold at game's end wins. What a surprise. Breezy said that more than 30 publishers have granted permission to use their game images within the Board Game Geek game. Click on... No, let's ignore that part because that's poor editing there. Breezy is also soliciting Board Game Geek users to post a comment and congratulatory note to Board Game Geek on a geek list. At least 500 avatars of Board Game Geek users will be used to decorate the box bottom and sides. So if you want to be included, hustle over to the geek list and post a shout out to Dirk and Aldi. And I'm guessing if for some reason your avatar is generated from, say, potentially images that belong to somebody else, you're probably not going to get on the box cover. So, you know, make one up and post that. It'll be cool.
Interesting. I hope that's a good game.
I hope so, too, because I'm going to buy it whether it is or not.
One way or the other.
That's right.
He'll own a copy. Mm-hmm. Other news, if you're planning on buying gaming stuff, Wizards of the Coast gaming stuff, more specifically, this weekend you're in luck. You can score some free Wizards merchandise to go along with your purchase. That doesn't happen very often.
Nope.
You don't even have to mail in a rebate or stand on a soap crate and sing for your supper. You'll get free stuff right there at the game store.
Which is good, because I couldn't sing for my supper if, my life depended on it.
They don't make a bucket big enough for me to carry a tune. To get some free gaming stuff, just visit a participating game store. No online stores. This is to support the brick-and-mortar retailers or the, you know, just ones made out of boulders and stuff.
Yeah.
Spend at least $15 on Wizards of the Coast products. If you do, you'll get your choice of some Magique the Gathering sample decks, a booster pack from the Demon Web expansion of D&D minis, a Star Wars minis Clone Wars starter pack, or a hardcover copy of R.A. Salvatore's The Orc King. I may get it just to get the book. Mm. Head on over to www.wizards.com/summer-gift-promo to find out where you can get your stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking if this was available in our area, that I would be grabbing that Star Wars Minis Clone Wars pack.
Yeah, I was looking at that too.
Fortunately, I checked the Wizards website for the locations that are going to be doing this promotion, and we are free of any location that is going to be doing that.
Oh, well, that's typical.
Yes. Welcome to Oregon. Thank you.
Welcome to the armpit of California.
Yeah. No. We're more like the unexpected crotch shot of Oregon.
Yeah, right there on the border. Aberrant Games has announced that Warlands has been released and should be on its way to distributors and local game stores around the globe sometime this week. It will also be available directly from Aberrant Games at www.aberrantgames.com on their website June 20th. And I don't know if I've mentioned this one before, but it's another automobile vehicular combat type game. This one has vehicles as well as miniatures and individual models that will be used in conjunction with it.
We're just digging on those vehicular combat games, aren't we?
We are. We've still got to bust out Project Death Race and a couple other things. So
I believe that will be Thursday.
We should do that Thursday because we didn't do it last Thursday.
Because, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
And yeah. They happen to us quite frequently. And we're disorganized.
There's no consistency here. We just...
No, there's not. There's not.
Wander through the verse.
That's right. Just kind of sightseeing, really.
Yes.
If you would like to hear more about these stories, or in fact read more about these stories, you can head over to our little batch of three, www.gamingreport.com, www.boardgamenews.com, and www.robotviking.com. And I'm going to point out that we're, once again, skipping. You know, I'm not even sure if we're going to continue with our little What Did He Say segment, because we've gotten to the point where the topics we're covering don't avail themselves of a couple of neat little definitions and things like that. But you never know. You might see it again someday.
Yeah, if we find something that's relevant to what we're talking about, mm-hmm. we'll throw it in there.
Yep. So for now, I'll just say on with the show. Alrighty, here we are in the meat of the show, the main topic, the thrust of the... never mind.
wow.
Woohoo! Dodged that one.
Just barely. Yeah.
Andy and I like to collect things. I don't know whether you've noticed that, Gamer Nation. I've got this thing called a board game collection. And it's quite extensive, and Andy has a somewhat similar one.
Yes, I also collect dust from time to time.
I also collect dust. I have it categorized. I just don't have anywhere to store it, so I've had to leave it laying all over the house.
Well, at least you know where it is.
Yeah, it's easy to find. but we like to collect things so much that we thought we would talk about our 10 favorite resource collection games. These are games in which you are collecting something to trade in for something else, which hopefully scores you some points. And we kind of like these games. These are a lot of fun. In fact, one of our early introductions to board gaming in general was a resource collection game, which we will talk about here within this list. So here's 10 things, 10 resource collection games that we enjoy, and hopefully you will enjoy as well. And I can't do a fancy Dave Echo. I don't have it. I don't have a fancy Dave Echo. So I'm just going to have to, yeah.
Tron thing going on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the Echotron. There you go. So number 10, game number 10. Number 10 is a game called Antique. Now, I heard us talk about Antique before.
Oh, at least once.
At least once. Possibly more than once. and while Antique is actually one of our top 10 rated games overall, the reason it's hitting number 10 in this list is because resource collection is not the main thrust of the game, because it's more of a civilization building game and that kind of stuff. But it is a game in which you collect resources and trade them in for other things, and you do this through the device called the rondel on the board. And spaced out around this rondel are various resources. They are, help me out here, they are iron, they are gold, and they are marble.
Marble, yeah.
And you trade these in to build, respectively, soldiers, knowledge, and temples. And through their use, you build up your nation and gradually sidle over and wipe out Jake.
Because he spread himself way too thin.
That's right. So, all right, that's kind of your basic overview of Antique. And it made the list just because it has such a unique method of collecting resources. With that rondel, it's not only... it not only determines what you can do in a given turn, but how often you can do that particular thing, and it's just a neat little device that marks the game out into distinct phases, really.
Yeah, because you can't just sit in one spot and stockpile a bunch of resources. Each turn comes around, you have to move on that rondel into a different category.
Yes. And so that's Antique. We've talked about it enough that we really don't need to go all that far into it in this particular show. Just know that our number 10 favorite resource collection game is Antique. Number nine is a game I'm sure most of Gamer Nation has heard of. And that game, it's kind of the foundation of modern Euro games in terms of opening it up to the general public and whatnot. And that is the ever-popular gateway game, Settlers of Catan.
Indeed.
And if you haven't played this game, well, you know, shame on you.
Get out there and buy it.
Right. Immediately, if not sooner. As most of you will know, you're settling the island nation of Catan, and in order to do so, you have to build houses, or you have to build villages and cities, and in order to build villages and cities and roads and all that kind of stuff, you need to collect resources. The reason this comes in at number 9 instead of, you know, somewhere higher up the list is because resource collection, again, is not really the main thrust of the game, and it's not really the way in which you score points, but it is part of the game, and you accomplish, of course, your resource collection through trading and with your fellow neighbors and a series of die rolls that tell you what resources are produced on what tiles and that sort of thing. So, you know, you get it through through trading and resource production off the tiles that are rolled on some dice, and you begin trading your sheep and your wood and your brick and your stone in for all the other things that really score you the points in the game. Yeah, Settlers of Catan. And again, we've talked about this, and we talked about it at length in one of our early shows. So again, not too much coverage of it here. Number 8. Numeral 8. Ocho. Is a game that we like to call Alchemist. And we call it Alchemist because, well, that's the game's title.
Well, that's silly.
Okay, this is actually pretty much pure resource collection. What you are is you are a wizard or a sorcerer or, you know, some sort of magic user type, and you are making potions. But in order to make potions, you have to have ingredients. And your ingredients are the resources that you'll be collecting and trading in. What you get is a number of resources to start the game with in your hand as a starting player, plus a number of resources that are hidden inside a bag. And between the resources you draw from the bag and the resources you have in front of you, you're creating a potion. And this potion will use three resources in order to make a unique potion. Each resource is something weird, like, you know, Eye of Newt and you know, Raven's Wings and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure, throw me in the pot.
Sure, yeah. No problem. And you make a potion, and then the other players can use your potion, which will produce a smaller number of cubes, some of which you get, some of which the other players get, that they then can put back into making new potions. And you get points based on you know, the value of a given potion. And the object of the game is that he who has scored the most number of points through potion production and collection of various potions will win the game. And the game kind of has a built-in timer, because when you've only got two potion colors left in the supply, the game ends. And at that point, you tally up the points. And there you go. You also have a hidden secret cube color, which you are supposed to actually remove those cubes from the game, and those will score you some extra points if you manage to get the most of your particular secret color out of the game. Alchemist is a lot of fun, actually. It's pretty short. It's about, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes, I guess, once you get the rules down and figure out what you're doing.
Yeah, it goes pretty quick, so you got to be thinking ahead on when you're doing your potions, so you can try and get the most out of them, but you also have to be careful of other people cranking out smaller potions just to get a few points ahead on you. So.
Right. And the potions are worth anywhere from 1 to 10 points, and so depending on how you do it, you can either do a lot of short potions, little tiny point potions, and get those, you know, rolling really fast, or you can concentrate on doing some of the bigger potions and not produce nearly as quickly, but get more points for it as you go along. And of course, it gets increasingly more difficult to make a given potion as resources are removed from the game, and you know, plus your secret colors and all that stuff. So towards the end of the game, it can be quite tense if everybody's relatively close together. But it can also be fairly disappointing if you've reached, you know, you're reaching the last few cubes in a in your color, and you realize that other people are so far ahead that there's no possible way for you to collect enough points to get anything done.
We need to get Jake in on this game, because I think he'd lose at it pretty well.
Yeah, this is a game that Jake will enjoy the defeat, the taste of defeat once again.
Yes.
In fact, I think there's a potion for that. But it's a lot of fun. It's I believe it's anywhere from 3 to 5 players, if I recall correctly. Don't quote me on that, please. It could be 3 to 4. It may handle 2, but I think it plays really best with at least 3. Because that way there's enough stuff going on that you can, you know, there's a little bit of a challenge. You can't just freeze the other guy out. So that's Alchemist. Game number 7. That we are going to discuss. Game number 7. Yes, I'm going to do that for every number. I will repeat myself.
Excellent.
Unendingly.
This is one of my favorites just because of the sound effects it makes.
Yes, it has a very unique sound effect. This game is called Mesopotamia. And the idea of this game is you're playing settlers in and around Mesopotamia. And you need to make sacrifices to your particular god. And you do this at the ziggurat in the center of the board. And the person who makes 4 sacrifices first wins the game. But in order to do that, you have to have a certain amount of mana that you have built up by praying in the temples. Which means you not only have to assign guys to be in the temple and praying, but you also have to build the temples. And here's where our resource collection comes in, because you're building temples out of stone and wood. And nicely, the game comes with actual rocks.
It does.
Yeah, rocks and actual wood, little wooden sticks and whatnot.
Wooden bits.
Yep, and they stack right up on top of your playing pieces. It's kind of cool.
They do, yeah. It looks like a guy carrying a stick of lumber through the forest. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So you collect these stones and these rocks. You build temples. You also build huts. From these same resources. And you also need to increase your population, because something interesting happens when you finally go to the ziggurat to make an offering, I suppose, make a sacrifice. And that's where the interesting sound effect comes in, which is what again, Andy?
Well, when you throw your sacrifice into the ziggurat, it goes and, you know, it goes up in smoke.
Indeed, so. It does.
Yes. But see, that throws in another interesting kind of a kink into the game is, you know, you get to build huts and you get to mate to increase your population.
Yes.
So anytime there's mating involved, yeah, I'm playing that game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which explains your tour of Southeast Asia.
Yes, somewhere over there, there's a bunch of funny-looking kids.
Shazam! Anyway, there are also action cards that allow you to do certain things. This has essentially what we're going to call an action point allowance, which means you can move five places on this board that gets built as you go away from known areas. You'll be putting down tiles to kind of decide where it is you're going, what you've discovered there, and what resources are available to you. And you know, on the whole, it's a really fun game, especially when Andy's doing all his little sound effects and whatnot.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not the same. It's never the same board game, which I really enjoy. As you explore, you lay down your tiles as to whether you can find a rock quarry or you find lumber, and you know where you can place your huts and build your temples and stuff like that. So it's unique every time you play it.
Yeah. And you do kind of have to, you really have to manage your turns pretty well, because like we were saying, every time you deliver a sacrifice, not only does the sacrifice get used up, but whatever one of your guys went there to deliver the sacrifice, he dies too, just because,
yeah.
You know, apparently
nobody told him that.
Apparently your deity of choice is somewhat indiscriminate as to what is sacrifice and what is worshiper. So he'll take everything.
Yeah.
So you do need to produce more guys. Because not only that, you also assign them out to the temples, and they build up the mana every turn. And you know, you get some bringing resources and some exploring to open up new areas. So you do have to build up your pieces quite a bit in order to do well at this game. It's a heck of a lot of fun, really. We played it, what, two or three times, I think.
A couple of times. It's been a while since we played it, so we should break that one back out at some point.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you can add your own sound effects. Andy likes to do it. Every time.
Every time.
All right, game number six that we will discuss. Our sixth most favorite resource collection game.
Number six.
Number six. Number six, 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 six. See? Echo. I can do it. Our number six game is Kingsburg. You've heard us talk about this before in one of our On the Table segments. You should kind of have a fairly reasonable idea of how this game works. If you don't, if this is the first show you're listening to, and God help you if it is. Kingsburg is all about defending your territory while at the same time pleasing the king. You have a number of courtiers that hang around the king and do their own little specific thing, which you will try to get influence with. So you roll some dice. This tells you which quarters you can use. You place some of your guys on these courtiers, and then they provide various resources or points or special abilities. You then take those resources they provide, or those special abilities, and you invest them in defenses and improvements for your particular portion of the city. And then at the end of each year, and there are 5 years, an invading army comes, and hopefully you've built up the appropriate resources and defenses to defend yourself against these invaders. You score points all along the way, both for resources spent, buildings built, and advisors influenced. And at the end of the game, after 5 years, after the final defense, he with the most points, guess what? Wins.
Wins!
Mm-hmm. Because that makes sense.
And was that the one that Jake won? That wasn't Kingsburg, was it?
I no longer remember Jake's victory.
Oh, so it didn't happen.
I have blotted it from my mind.
Ah, Jake, you're back to square one, buddy.
That's right. Sorry. Ha ha. No, yeah, it's a really fun game, and I know it was a really fun game, because, and I've said this before, I know it was a really fun game because I enjoyed it even when my parents were playing it with us.
And that's a testament to the staying power of a game.
That's right. If it can survive parental involvement, then it's probably a pretty decent game.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. The way the track works as to where you're putting your dice and your points and stuff to gain your gain what you need to get is interesting, and it plays out very well.
Yeah, it's very good. So, all right, yeah, if you want to hear more about it, then somewhere around Christmas time there, I did a podcast about Kingsburg, and then there was this thing that happened, supposedly, a couple of months ago, that some sort of Jakeover or something like
yeah.
that. I claim no knowledge. It's random. I don't know.
I don't know. I stand by your theory that it didn't happen.
Okay, good. Good, because that makes two of us, and,
yes.
you know, we outvote him then.
Majority rules.
That's right. So there. Game number five. We haven't talked about this game before.
No, we haven't.
Game number five is Cleopatra and the Society of Architects. Now, here's the thing. You're going to open the box on this game, and you're going to go, oh, my God, this has the best bits ever. You are. It's true. There's no denying that. Because the idea of Cleopatra and the Society of Architects is that you are playing an architect, imagine that, and you are building the palace for Cleopatra. And you are building that palace, I kid you not, in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
There will be statues that you put up, there will be obelisks that you will put up, there is a garden that you build, there are walls to erect, doors to erect, all kinds of things, and they are all done in actual plastic.
I believe there's an altar as well that has to be constructed.
Altar. Oh, man, there's, yeah. And we would rate Cleopatra and the Society of Architects higher in this list, except for one thing. The actual resource collection isn't the point of the game. The point of the game is to, and get this, is to not collect corruption amulets. Because at the end of the game, he with the most corruption amulets, even if he's got the most points, gets thrown to the crocodiles and loses the game.
Yeah, I wound up being Jafar in this game because I was usually corrupt.
You get these corruption tokens by playing playing or spending resources that are maybe not quite as above board and as of quite the same quality as a as another guy might. You know, maybe you're pushing your crew a little too hard or using black market resources or, you know, stuff like that. Nothing that would happen today, of course.
Oh, no, 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 no,
no. Anyway, in order to kind of rush your build, these things, you know, you can play them, but they're going to cost you at the end of the game. He who has the most dies, basically.
Yeah.
And this is, I kid you not, this is really a nice, nice game at a reasonable price, and it's well worth the play.
I think this would fall into the cat category of games that are pretty.
Yes, this is definitely
it's
game.
It's very a very visually appealing game, as well as being fun to play. And it's one that we don't play very often, but when we do, it's an enjoyable game. So
yeah, there's all kinds of little strategies for how you want to collect your resources and then spend them. It's really hard to describe this game on a podcast, because this game is so visual in nature and its appeal is so visual that you really have to see it to understand what the draw is.
Yeah, in fact, you wind up using part of the box as your game board and adding these bits to it, because that's part of your of where you're working on.
That forms part of the palace, and you build the walls around it and you build a garden on top of it. And like I said, you really have to see it. There are some absolutely wonderful pictures of it over on Board Game Geek. If you just put in Cleopatra and the Society Architects and scroll down to the picture section, you'll see what we're talking about.
That'd be actually a good one to paint up the bits, or at least weather them a little bit
to
give them a nice effect. And yeah, there's pictures of that kind of stuff on Board Game Geek as well. So there's a lot of different things that you can do to add to the game, but just out of the box, it's very visually stunning.
Yeah. And well worth the money you're going to put on it, because it's a fun game, and people are going to enjoy it, I think, no matter what their particular taste is.
And I think it just came down in price, or it had been on sale for a while, because last time I looked at it, it was only about $30 or $35.
Yeah, it came down about $5 or $10, I think.
Something like that. So yeah, it's very attainable in your gaming budget as well, so...
So Cleopatra and the Society of Architects, well worth the time. Game number four, is Kalis. The idea of Kalis is that you are building a new castle for King Philip of France in 1289 BC. Or, yeah, no, AD, excuse me, 1289 AD. What year is it? Okay.
1892.
That's right. In 1892, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Okay. Anyway, the point of this game is you have a series of locations on the board that produce resources or provide some benefit or have a game ability that you may need. And in order to build this castle, you have to place your workers on these locations in such a way that you are collecting the resources you need in the proper order to build the things you want to build and to open up more spaces. And this all happens on a kind of a winding track, and you will take this track in order from item number one all the way down through the last available item. So, for example, you could collect wood and stone from, say, a market stall in order to build the beginnings of a library, for example. But if you don't collect it in the right order, you won't have it available when it comes time to actually do the construction. So it's vitally important to work out what order you need to do things in to accomplish your goals on any given turn. And this becomes quite the thing. I mean, you will invest a long time on a given turn trying to figure out where you should place your limited supply of workers in order to accomplish what you want. And you don't get to play some just willy-nilly. You alternate turns. So your opponent is also trying to get these same goals accomplished, and he may take something you need. So you'll all of a sudden have collected resources that now you can't spend because your opponent is on that space.
Yeah, this becomes frustrating in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. So once you've collected these resources and you built whatever outlying buildings you're going to build, you then also need to build on the castle. Because if you fail to build on the castle, you won't get the all-important victory points that actually win you the game. The frustration becomes balancing resources in order to build additional locations to do things with against having enough workers left over to build the castle, because the person who builds the most portions of the castle gets the most points. So it's a balancing act all the way through this game. And every step of it requires that you think about what you're doing and what your opponents are doing and your eventual goal.
Yeah, and the difficult thing about it is once you get a plan set in your mind as to how you want to set your workers out and gather your resources and what you want to build, it's difficult to have any kind of a backup plan once you've committed to it, because once you get far enough down the track in this, there's no going back. So you might get stuck with a bunch of stuff that you can't use.
Yeah.
So you really got to be on top of it. And it's a difficult game, but it's a lot of fun because, boy, it really twists your gray matter around.
Yeah. And it's one of those games that people either like it or they hate it. I like it because it's a thinky game, and I like thinking. And so I like to put some time and investment into planning how things are going to work out. There are those, though, who find that this game is too long and maybe a little bit too dry. In other words, it's all mechanics and no theme. So somebody got the bright idea to take care of those two problems with our third game in our list. And that game is called The Pillars of the Earth. Now, interestingly, this game is based on a Ken Follett novel called, strangely enough, The Pillars of the Earth. And once again, you're building something. You're building a cathedral. And much like Kalis, you are operating along essentially a track of events that happen in order. And it's essential to plan where you're placing your workers so that you have the right stuff at the right time in order to add to this cathedral and score the points that you need to win the game. Now, the thing is, the reason Pillars works better than Kalis does for most people is that it has a pretty definite time limit. You know, you're not going to be at the game for hours like you will with Kalis. You'll be at Pillars for maybe an hour and a half, hour and 45, possibly 2 hours, depending on how people do. Kalis can easily be a 3 or 4 hour long game. And that's too long for some people.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot more theme to it, so it's not quite as dry as Kalis is. In fact, this cathedral you're building actually gets built in sections and is a 3D cathedral in the middle of the board. So, you know, as you add pieces, this thing kind of rises out of the middle of the board, and it's really easy to tell what your progress is and how far along you are. It also comes with some cards that give you special abilities or allow you to do a variety of different tasks and things and get more workers. You can buy or sell goods or, you know, just purely produce victory points and that kind of thing. You're paying for the ability to select these cards with gold that you earn on the board, in addition to collecting all the other resources that you need in order to do the actual building of the cathedral. And, you know, I hesitate to say it's better than Kalis, because I really, really like Kalis, but Pillars of the Earth, if you've got people that don't have patience to do Kalis, it scores there, because it's a much shorter game to play.
Yeah, I think the 3D building thing adds into it as well. The more things you have going on the board game will keep people kind of focused on it. I think Kalis comes across as, like you say, being kind of dry and bland as far as theme is concerned. But like you say, it is a very good game. It is a very thinking game, and it really will make you sit down and consider what you're going to do for that turn. Pillars of the Earth, is also a very good game, but it ties in a lot more things with it.
Yeah, I think Pillars of the Earth gives people more of a sense of control over what they're doing as well.
Right. The phase of where you're collecting things and where you're building stuff is not quite as restrictive as Kalis, but you're on more of a timeline.
Right. So, okay, and now, for example, say Pillars of the Earth is even too long for you. And you know, it has limited attraction for you. Well, here's our game number two. Number two is Age of Empires 3. And you're thinking to yourself immediately, what in the hell are you talking about a video game for? Well, I'm not. I'm talking about a board game that was based on the Age of Empires 3 video game. It's almost Kalis and Pillars of the Earth light. But having said that, it's also very fun. Andy and I were both pretty surprised when we cracked open the box on this, laid it out, and got to playing it, because it moved very fast. There's not as many steps to what you're trying to accomplish as there are in, say, Pillars and Kalis. But essentially what's happening is you're a colonial power, and you're looking to settle the new world. So you're going to be doing some discovery. You're going to be colonizing. You're going to be expanding your fleet, building capital buildings, developing your economy, maybe even declaring war. So it's kind of got the whole flavor of the Age of Empires 3 video game condensed into a board game. Again, you have a track of events that you will be following down very strictly. Again, you will be placing workers in these various events to collect resources and move to the new world and that kind of stuff. You get just a ton of plastic with this thing too. I mean, you got little army guys and little settler guys and ships and doubloons and missionaries and, you know, all kinds of things going on there. But it plays very quickly. It's easy to get into if you're not into these kind of deep strategic thinky type games. If you just want something that's a little more light and a little more fun, then Age of Empires 3 is probably for you. The reason we've put it at number two is just because it is so quick and so easy to get people into and provides so much rapid fun. It just naturally kind of gets played more and is generally enjoyed by more people than say, like Kalis would be.
Yeah, I was really surprised at how quickly we got into that game and went through it, because we played a couple of games in an evening, and it's much more intuitive as to what you should do and how you should gather your resources and how to play them out. There's still some thinking involved, but it's not nearly as crunchy as Kalis. So
right. So, and you know, truthfully, when we were deciding what order to put these games in, Kalis, Pillars of the Earth, and Age of Empires 3 could easily have been interchanged with each other in any of the spots, 2, 3, and 4. So I think technically we're going to have to say that these three games are tied for number two, even though we've rated them slightly differently.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here we are at the big one. This is number one, and I'm guessing this is going to surprise a few people. I'm just guessing. Number one is a game called Fish Flupen Frikadellen. It's a German game.
No, really?
Yeah, really. And I cannot now remember what those exactly mean. I know one means fish.
It's fish, cigarettes, and hamburgers, I believe.
Is it? Maybe it is. Or, no. It's fish, cigarettes, and fried chicken, I think.
Just, it's oddball, random things that you have to collect.
Okay. So, rather than just kind of explaining the game to you immediately, what I'm going to do is read you the description of the game from the back of the box. And I'm probably going to blow a gasket somewhere along the line in this game, in this description that I'm going to read you.
Yes, because this is a Friedman Freeze game,
yes.
You'll know why here shortly.
We'll give you a hint here. It's Fish Flupen Frikadellen from Friedman and Freeze. Here I go. What a fuss! The frightfully fearsome feudal lord Fizo has held the fascinating fairy Fabula in captivity since the famous February festivities. In order to free the fairy, you must redeem her from the Fizo's fetid and fusty, feculent fetter. Frustrated, you flee into the Finnish fjords in order to fetch a few of the fascinating fetishes so highly favored by the foul prince. Frantically, you begin bartering with the local folks. A few florins will get you some fish, which you can be trading for flowers, which again can be traded for fur, fruits, flutes, fettuccine, furniture, fuel, fiddles, or maybe even a fridge. When your finances allow you to obtain three different fetishes, you have won the game. You may applaud.
I have a headache.
Okay, so why is this game number one? Because this game is all about resource collection for other things. In fact, it's so much about it that you will collect one resource, carry it across the board to somebody else, trade it in for a second resource, which you will then carry across the board and trade to somebody else to collect a third resource or possibly a fetish. That is the entire game. It is all about collecting and trading in and getting things. Eventually, the way it is you have a number of market stalls set up on the board. And each market stall wants one thing and provides another thing. And only by connecting up these market stalls in kind of a logical pattern will you be able to trade enough things for enough other things to get the things that you need to win the game. And it really is all about getting only three of these different fetishes. And fetish is not like, you know, the chicken or the feather. We're talking like shrunken heads and things like that, okay? When you get three of these, you win the game. And it is complicated enough to get three of these that it is actually a whole entire game just to get three.
It really is. You spend the entire game, like you said, running back and forth to these different marketplaces. And another thing that's interesting about it, as you trade at these markets, the prices change as well.
Oh,
they
yes.
go up and down according to the demand of what you've been trading. So you've got to really pay attention to what's going on, because the market fluctuation will sideline you just as quickly as anything.
Yeah, if you're concentrating on grabbing just one thing, say you're just grabbing fruit from one market stall and carrying across somebody else, and you go back and grab some more and carry it, eventually you're going to be priced out from getting fruit, because you won't have enough florins to acquire any more fruit because it'll be priced so high. So you really have to kind of spread yourself around the board. Now, the other neat thing is, this is a rather unique game for one particular reason. There are three different versions of this game. Now, the boards are the same. The cards are the same. The stalls are the same. The things you're trading for are the same. But the pawns are different. You can play five players with one game. With three of these things, with all three different sets, you can play 15 different players. And travel from board to board.
Yeah, one board was enough to give us both I don't know what, but...
Yeah, so essentially what happens is if the board you're on, the prices are too high for the thing you want, travel to a different board. Play on that one until the prices on the other one are back where you want them, and then go back. It really is that simple. The stalls are laid out in a random order because they're on cards, and you place cards at the stall locations. So each time you play, the game's that much different. And then each board you're on will be different. And I have yet to see 15 people play this game, but I so want to, because it is going to be so crazy to get it to watch these people try to accomplish their goals.
Yeah, five people on one board is crazy enough, but to get three together would be just insane.
Oh yeah. I would love to see it. In fact, if anybody is going to, you know, Gen Con or Origins or any of that stuff, see if somebody's playing this game and just watch them do it and see how many people they get involved with it. It's Fish Floopin' Fricadillin. It's still semi-available. I don't think it's actively in print, but there are still copies out there to be had.
Yeah, I had to search around for a little while before I finally found my copy of it. So it was, it's definitely worth having. A little pricey. I think I paid upwards of $50 or $60 for my copy, but I think I shelled out a few dollars extra just so I could obtain a copy of it.
Yeah, it was well worth getting. So this is definitely our number one resource collection game, Fish Floopin' Frickadellin' from Freedom and Freese.
And it, as far as the game goes, it's got some really interesting artwork on the.
Oh yeah, it's got great artwork
on the cards. It's just there's just some really off the wall stuff that he puts into his games, and it's got a very animated cartoon type of feel to it. So.
Mm-hmm. All his games are very nice to look at. Very interesting art. Very well done art, and definitely worth checking out if you can possibly get a hold of it. So there you go, Gamer Nation. That is, those are our 10 favorite resource collection, resource trading games. Any one of these would be a fun time for you, your friends, and possibly even your family. And I can't really recommend enough checking these out, because like I said, we like to collect things.
Join us now as we enter a world that many think doesn't exist. A world of strange sights, strange sounds, and pleasant scents. Come with us to That's What She Said.
Hey, this is Kat. Or should I say, GM Kat. That's right, I do have letters in front of my name. So far, I've run 2 sessions of Star Wars Saga Edition, and I'm prepping for my 3rd. Granted, I do have some pretty big shoes to fill. But you try jamming someone who runs a podcast about the system. Anyway, I wanted to share a few things I've learned behind the GM screen. Trying to run combat while you're laughing is really tough. Initiative cards are extremely helpful. I'm slowly beginning to realize that I will never roll this many nat 20s as a player. The ladies in my group flirt with the NPCs a lot more than the guys do. But anyone flirting with my NPCs cracks me up. Lastly, a rock falls and you all die is still my default egress for a tricky situation. But since it's Star Wars, maybe I should change it to an asteroid hurtles into your ship and you all die. Guess we'll find out. Oh, and Andy, sorry if I gave Brian any ideas.
I don't believe her.
You don't believe her?
I don't think she's sorry a bit. she has been plotting my demise for.
Well,
in cahoots with my evil bastard GM.
I'm not saying anything, but I did sort of run the preliminary campaign idea past her.
Great. Great. Oh, that's, oh yeah. So long, you know, so long as Jake dies first, I don't care.
You know, if you're not careful, people are going to get the idea we don't like Jake.
I thought that's what we were trying to do.
Nah, we love Jake.
I like Jake.
He makes a wonderful patsy.
He's my mostest favoritest noob.
On the table.
Well. I know that last show I said we were going to play Project Death Race.
Did you say that?
I said. Yeah. And I know I said that to Gamer Nation as a whole, and that's what we were going to do on Thursday. So I'm going to ask you, Andy, how was our little playtest of Project Death Race?
It didn't go as we had planned. I blame Jake.
You blame Jake?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Jake bailed first, so.
Jake bailed first. I mean, honestly, an anniversary? Come on. Priorities, man.
No, I think that's this week.
Is that this week?
Last week, I think.
Oh, that's right. Last week
random
was, yeah,
family
random family drop in.
I don't know. There, you know, the phase of the moon, and then, yeah.
It's so hard to get a group together.
It is. And then, you know, my continual sinuses from hell problem.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy you a Roto-Rooter.
That's brilliant. I'll just remove them.
We could get. Oh, I know. We'll get a ketchup. You know, one of them ketchup strainer things.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, you got that twisty thing with the cloth on, and you just right up in there and take care of it.
Oh, that'll be perfect.
Okay, for those of you left listening after that little thing, there, we did play some games. And if you remember way back in episode uno or episode zero, we said we might occasionally talk about video games and things. And I realize that now we're kind of treading on the ground that the Minus World walks upon. Jake's podcast. Jake has a podcast. Did you know that? Yes. But we're going to go ahead and talk about video games anyway. That's what we're going to do.
Because
that's what we played this last week was video games. Because nobody came over to play board games, so I had to entertain myself.
Yeah, we couldn't play with anybody else, so we played with ourselves. Something.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, okay, so what was your attempt this week?
I finally picked up a copy of Force Unleashed.
It was
in the $20 price bin, so I grabbed a copy of that for my PlayStation Portable, and it's an enjoyable little game. It's a little bit more of a button masher than I had hoped for, but there is lightsabery goodness in it, and I will just say that Force Lightning is the coolest friggin' thing ever.
Oh. So you got the PSP version, which, if I recall correctly, is considerably different from, say, the PS3 version.
I believe so. I think they had to do a little bit of programming changes in it because the PSP is not obviously as profound at crunching numbers and doing stuff as the PS3. But it was still an enjoyable little experience. It's interesting.
So Force Lightning, you say?
Force Lightning. You know, instead of running in and, you know, hacking down each opponent individually with my lightsaber, which is fun.
I
can walk into a room and light up five or six guys at once with Force Lightning because there's just this chain effect that goes out once you hit one guy. And, you know, they all dance and wiggle and, you know, drop to the floor smoking. So, yeah, it's fun.
That's pretty awesome there.
You know, pick them up, force choke them, throw them across the room. It's... Yeah.
One of those early mornings when I'm in, you're going to have that with you so I can check it out.
Yeah, I'll show it to you. It's not my favorite Star Wars game, but it was a fun play. I mean, if you pick it up at a good price, I think it's worthwhile.
Cool. So are you now a member of the Sam Witwer fan club?
Sure.
He's the voice of the apprentice.
Oh, okay, sure, okay.
Money's handy.
I knew that. Sorry, Sam.
Oh, jeez. This is why I have to keep him on a leash.
It's true. That and I, you know, bark at the neighbors.
Yeah, you can bark at my neighbors. Bark worthy.
They need barking at.
That's right. Okay, so while you were, you know, lightsabering things and force lightning things, I was sailing the seven seas. Well, one sea anyway.
One sea, yeah.
Uh-huh. I've been playing Sid Meier's Pirates.
Aha!
Now, I realize the first thing Gamer Nation and you are going to say is, yes, but have you finished Fallout 3 yet? Or Mass Effect yet?
Or Mass Effect, yeah. I'm going to go with no on that one.
Yeah, sorry, Gamer Nation, I'm that kind of gamer.
Because I haven't even finished Fallout 3.
Yeah. It's like, ooh, shiny, next one.
Uh-huh, yeah, it's the whole, it's the parakeetitis.
Mm-hmm. Again, $20 purchase here, Sid Meier's Pirates. It's an older game, I'll grant you that. But it's been kind of fun. You sail around the Caribbean, depending on your pronunciation preference. And basically, you're pirating. So there you go, that's the whole game right there. No, it's... You know, actually, I'll tell you, while there is kind of a goal in the game, which is to recover members of your family who have been spirited away and sold into some form of slavery or indentured servitude or just basically they're, you know, not available to you for moral guidance or anything, so you know, you have to become a pirate. That goal really doesn't matter all that much. I mean, you can complete it if you want to. There's no penalty really for not completing it. Other than that, it's very open-ended. They essentially plunk you down in a ship, and off you go. You can proceed in the game any way you choose to. You can either be a trader, you know, or you can be a pirate and go out and, you know, blow ships out of the water and steal the treasure, and you can be an explorer, or you can do all kinds of other weird little things. And the game really doesn't care which one you do. It's all open to you, and you can do any combination of them if you so choose. So I've been kind of enjoying it, getting kind of my bearings. And, you know, goofing around with it this last weekend, trying to see just how far I can push it. And so far, there's nothing that quite beats a 40-gun salute, essentially.
Yeah.
When aimed at the deck of an opposing ship. In fact, I'm a little too dangerous with those guns, because things that I intend to raid and steal the gold from oftentimes accidentally sink.
Yeah, they tend to implode on themselves.
Yeah.
Straight to the bottom.
Yeah. And it's got a number of neat features. I mean, you go into town, you meet the governor, you meet the governor's daughter, and then you go dance with the governor's daughter. And it's not a euphemism, dancing with the governor's daughter. You are actually going to have to dance in this game. You got to push the right buttons at the right time in order to do the right dance moves, or otherwise you stumble around the dance floor and look like an idiot. So yeah, there, you got that, and you know, there's buried treasure to find, and all sorts of, you get letters of mark from, you know, various countries that allow you to fight their enemies, and you get ranks up and all kinds of stuff. It's been a lot of fun in a very sort of explore-y type game so far. So I've been enjoying it. I would say, if you're looking to be a pirate, give Sid Meier's Pirates a shot.
Pirates. So back to Mass Effect.
Oh yes, Mister. Oh, I didn't like Mass Effect. I didn't think it was all that great.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, you know, until I, you know, mm-hmm. played it again. Damn you.
How'd that work out for you?
First night getting it, I think I played for 8 or 9 hours straight.
Yeah.
it locked me in and would not let go.
Yeah.
After giving it a second play, I really, really found it to be a lot more enjoyable, simply because I think I did something like, oh, read the instruction book and how to, you know, bring up certain things and applications, and, oh, hey, there is a map function, and, oh, look, there's a scope on my rifle. And
That big papery thing is in there isn't just for looks, you know.
Instruction book. It's in there for a reason.
Yeah. Not that I read mine beforehand.
Yeah, well, of course not.
I just press buttons until something happens. And then remember how I made that thing happen. Yeah. So that's what we got to play this week, Gamer Nation. And, if you're behind the times like Andy and I are, then we can, I think, highly recommend all three of these games.
Yeah. In fact, IGN.com, I believe, has some new videos up for Mass Effect 2.
I don't want to know yet. I'm going to finish Mass Effect before I start checking out Mass Effect 2. That's what I'm going to do.
You know you want it.
I know. I want them all. They're like Pokemon. Except better.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's that time of the show again. There's not much to say about it. We're coming up right on the end. And, as usual, we've got a little bit of business to take care of. First off, let's talk iTunes for a minute, gang. As some of you know, we've been hunting ratings and reviews on iTunes. And I don't know if I've made myself entirely clear on this particular subject. If you go over to iTunes and you give our show, you know, some stars, whatever stars you think it deserves, and you give our show a rating, whatever rating you think it deserves, or a review, or whatever review, you know, it makes it really easy for other people to find our show and listen in and join Gamer Nation, because it pushes us right up those pages, up to the first page, which is, you know, kind of the prime spot to be. If you're running a podcast, you want to be on the first page of iTunes for your particular category. And since we are, in fact, running a podcast, well, guess where we want to be? That's right. That front page. And I know some of you are sitting there going, God, he's always talking about iTunes. Why doesn't he just share? Well, because we want to share ourselves, you see. We want to spread the word, the good gaming word, out to the gamer nation as yet unfound. And we want to bring people into the fold and kind of, you know, share what we enjoy about board games and, you know, video games and other sorts of games with Gamer Nation and with the populace who maybe doesn't have any idea what it's all about. And you can help us do that just by going over to iTunes and clicking stars and writing some words and, you know, maybe put a smiley face on the end of your review.
I like smiley faces.
Smiley faces are cool. We also have another thing we're doing. And we're, you know, I'm having some balance issues between one thing and another thing at the moment, because we've got this blog going on now, which you can find at www.d20radio.com/gameon. It's a WordPress blog, and we kind of throw all sorts of weird little random things in there. We haven't got a lot of posts right at the moment, because I'm also doing this other thing over at the Holocron you might have heard of at some point, which is just absolutely eating every ounce of reading time and writing time I have at the moment. But in order to remedy that situation, we have brought on board Kat, who is posting on our blog as well. And she's got a few posts up there that help, you know, help sort of, you know, let you get to know Kat and what she's like and what kind of games she plays and what she likes to do. So there's always that. And I understand that somebody else has access to write on that blog, but has yet to avail themselves of it.
I'm easing into this. I don't want to rush into anything.
Yeah, well.
I will be posting. I'm going to throw up some pictures of one of my Warlands vehicles to give an idea of what they are, what they look like, and how they can be painted up. So I'm going to throw a few of those up there as I'm progressing on them.
Oh, that'll be nice. That'll be nice to look at.
Give people an idea of scale of these things, because I'd showed another friend of ours some pictures, and he thought they looked like they were scaled up for like a Warhammer or something. And I said, no, they're about the size of a Hot Wheels car. And he's like, holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, those are nice little minis. I can't wait to see what you've done with them.
Yeah.
So yeah, head over to our blog, check things out. We may or may not have a little contest at some point that will only be announced on the blog and will in fact involve the blog. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled on that. Might put it up here this week and, you know, let you check it out. And that's www.d20radio.com/gameon to check out our blog. Now, speaking of miniatures, Mr. Andy, let's talk for a minute about Reaper's miniatures and contests.
Contests, yes.
Something tells me that you have some contests you're going to be entering soon.
Yes, I need to get off said backside and take some pictures of one that I've done and finish the other one that I'm working on.
Yeah. Please do finish that one, because I am so looking forward.
Yeah, I have to finish that one, because it's just too cool not to. Mm-hmm.
You have, let me check here, you have approximately 16 days left to do that in.
Excellent. That means I might get it done. Thank you to GM Chris for extending the deadline past the 5th, because I completely missed that one.
Yes, you did. Okay, so Gamer Nation can look forward to seeing your entries for the two Reaper mini contests that D20 Radio is running, one for a modified Reaper Star Wars miniature, and one for a, I believe it has to be modified as well, D&D miniature.
Well, I don't think it has to be modified, but it's a lot of the miniatures that Reaper makes are usable for D&D. So yeah, you can paint up a miniature for D&D, but the majority of the miniatures they have are not in line with the Star Wars universe. So it'll be helpful if you modify them in some way, which
right.
I will have done.
That's going to be awesome. You guys, you don't know what you're getting into, Gamer Nation. Oh, he's going to kill you with this one. This is going to be great. If, for some reason, you would like to get a hold of us, you can email us at gameon@d20radio.com. You can visit our forums at www.d20radio.com/forum and participate in all that. And, of course, you can check out our blog, which I've given you the address to several times already. But, hey, what's one more? www.d20radio.com/gameon. And you could send smoke signals if you live in a nearby area, or possibly a carrier pigeon if they still existed. Or, you know, psychic energy. You could try that, although I gotta tell you, I'm not all that receptive.
Makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
It does. It's kind of weird. Anyway, there's a number of ways you can get a hold of us, and please do if you have questions, comments, or suggestions to make, because we'd love to hear from you. So until next time, Gamer Nation,
Game on.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of SoundSnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
This is Shibuda, and I'm a game on Onion.